webcasting to the world, live the good news of God's righteousness for all humanity. This is the Gospel Revolution Radio Network. Greetings, you beautiful humans. This is Glenn Klein online. It is not hump day. It is Thursday, October 16th, 2008. The only October 16th, 2008 in the history of mankind. And to believe politically correct, in the history of humankind. Welcome in on this special edition of Glenn Klein Online on this Thursday night, coming to you live from the undisclosed location in Northern Wisconsin. Happy to have you with us. Whenever and wherever you are logging in right now. And yes, I was en route back to the undisclosed location last night, so we were not able to do the regular hump day edition of GKO. But nonetheless, since most of you beautiful humans listen at your convenience on the archive, it's not phasing you one iota. And it didn't even faze the founder and president of the Gospel Revolution, coming to us from beautiful Houston, Texas, home of the 2008 Gospel Revolution Convention, Mr. Michael Williams. Michael!
Good evening, Glenn.
How are you?
It is a marvelous, rainy last couple of days in Houston. I love the rainy days.
What do you mean by the last couple of days, or the last days?
The last couple of days it's been rainy in Houston.
I thought you were telling us some theological or spiritual concept that it was the last days in Houston.
Oh, we got to get your mind renewed.
All right. Well, that's what we do. Each and every...
We're in the process, aren't we?
Yes, it's a process known as salvation.
Mm-hmm.
And we're glad to have you folks wherever you are logging in. If you're listening and it's a little... couple minutes after 9 o'clock Eastern Time in the United States of America, you are invited and requested to call the toll-free Glenn Klein online hotline at 1-800-436-3260, 1-800-436-3260. Sean O'Halloran is waiting to hear from you. We've got plenty of time, plenty of room, and we want to hear from you. So get on the line and give us a call tonight at 1-800-436-3260. So, Michael, are you a little thrown off that we're not doing this on Wednesday night?
No, not at all. I'm always ready.
You're cool?
I'm so cool.
Well, you realize, though, don't you, that we're only 20 days out from the Gospel Revolution Convention?
Oh, no. It's not that close, is it?
A little less than 3 weeks from now, not only will we have elected a new president to take office in January here in the United States, but we're going to be celebrating the journey less than 3 weeks from now, starting on Wednesday night, November 5th, at the Marriott North at Greenpoint in beautiful Houston, Texas. And you told me, Michael, that the weather in Houston is perfect. It's the best time of the year to be in Houston, Texas, during early November.
Well, all the way through November. Actually, we've already pretty well began, really wonderful time of the year, which is from from October until the last of June. It's really been... Of course, I've only been here through one of those seasons so far, but believe me, if this one is anything like the last one, it's I have found the perfect place to live, actually.
Well, I mean, I don't know that one could call it perfect. I mean, we've got a perfect place waiting for us that we call heaven. And that was the subject, in a lot of ways, of the post today from the Gospel Revolution. That was entitled Eternal Optimist. And for those of you beautiful humans who follow this webcast on a regular basis, you know that Michael from time to time says things that I ask him if he's ever said before. And he'll just flat out say, no. Because things come out when you are immersed and baptized, if you will, in the grace of God. Things come out of your heart that you've never heard before that are inspired. Whether you are a teacher of the Bible or you are a professor of theology, it doesn't make a difference if you're a truck driver. But when you stay focused on the gospel, just stuff has a way of renewing your mind. And about, what would you say, Mikey, about 10 days ago?
About that, yes.
Yeah, we were talking, and we were just talking about our lives like we like to do when we're offline. And Michael said something to the effect, and I'm paraphrasing now, I realize it, that you are in the assumption, Michael, that everything is going to turn out for your own benefit. And then I commented that, well, at the end of the day, no matter what happens in this life, we all end up in a manifested peace with God that we call heaven. And you said something to the effect of, yes, we are the eternal optimist.
Yes, and, that's correct.
And that just sunk into my heart so much, because we are optimistic about the future, no matter what's happening in anybody's individual lives, no matter what's happening in the political world, no matter what's happened in the recent past history of the world. We know that at the end of the day, God has sustained a peace treaty with humanity for the last 2,000 years. And as far as we understand, we're all good to go. And at the end of the day, everybody ends up in a manifested place that we call heaven. And if you cannot be optimistic about that, Mikey, I don't know if there's anything to be optimistic about.
No, that's true. That's why we are eternal optimists, because our optimism is based in eternity. And it's you know, we can use it just as kind of a byword, if you will, but it's really true. There is eternal optimism, where that and I was telling you at the time that, you know, there's just, no matter what happens in my life, I just have this awareness and optimism in my heart that everything's going to turn out in my favor eventually. And it's just never over. There's just something about the gospel that nothing is terminal for you ever anymore. I know that's the way that it has become for me. No matter whether it is whether it's a loss, financial loss, whether it's a broken relationship or whatever, you literally, optimism just becomes really the rudder of your life, and because you don't ever see the end, because there is no end. And as you were bringing up, that even at the end, that's not the end, you know, because when all is said and done, you know, it's like the little song, you know, it says, every little thing gonna be all right.
Right.
And I really believe that. And there's family situations, there's global situations, but honestly, folks, I mean, we not only are we in a state of eternal optimism because our hope is based in eternity, but you know, I've just got a whole lot of optimism for where this whole planet is headed to right now in history. And as we have been progressing during the decades of my life, I know we have certainly progressed. And I know that the decades before my life, we've progressed from there. And so I know, I mean, history tells me that we're going to be better at this. We've gotten better at this all through the ages. We've gotten better at this. Even though there are seemingly major setbacks, it never, ever, you know, we've had cataclysmic things happen. We've had horrible wars, horrible plagues and diseases, but even enduring each and coming through each and every one of them, somehow the human race is getting better at what we do, and that is living. And, man, I tell you, I just have an awful lot of hope I think that your grandkids are going to live in a better world, and your grandkids after that are going to live in a better world. It doesn't mean they are not going to be subject to possibly things happening even worse than what we've experienced. But on the other side of that, it's going to be a better world. It's just happening. And when this world is over for us each individually, because my persuasion is this world will never end. This planet. Glenn, I tell you, you want optimism in your heart? Take out the end time doctrine and you'll have optimism in your heart.
All right. Well, let's wait for a second. We're already 10 minutes into the webcast, and you just said a number of very provocative things. And I would like you to back them up with whatever evidence or argument that you have. You just said that this world that we know of today is never going to end. What is your basis, Michael Williams, for making that kind of comment?
Yes. World without end. That's a good one coming from the background there.
Yeah.
But the basis of that is actually found in Scripture, and you can go all the way through Genesis. You can go through the prophets. You can go through the, especially in the Psalms, which we are told is the Scripture. We know beyond the shadow of a doubt. I can show you dozens and dozens of times where that the Scriptures record that God created this physical planet and it will never be destroyed. That this physical planet is actually a part of God. That it's not just a creation of God, but the Scriptures tell that that this is actually a part of God Himself. So for God to destroy this planet would be partly God destroying Himself. It is not going to happen.
Well, in that same vein, you also made a comment during your monologue here at the start of the show that nothing, you said nothing, is terminal.
Nothing.
What did you mean by that? That nothing is terminal?
Absolutely nothing is terminal. Nothing is going to end forever for as far as life is concerned. The people, this planet is not terminal. We've got the entire planet is in an upheaval because everybody's dealing with a terminal planet, whether it's religion or global warming or whatever the issue is. Everybody has a terminal mentality. And I'm telling you that the terminal mentality is a source of such mental and emotional defeat that it is just hardly, I mean, how in the world can you navigate through life when everything you are doing is terminal? There's nothing terminal about this. The place that where you are is not terminal. This is going to go on, and I'm going to go on. I'm going to leave this planet, and then my grandchildren will have grandchildren who will have grandchildren who will have grandchildren outside of some cataclysmic event. But even if that is the case, this it's going to go on. And we need to pass that kind of hope into another generation. And that's what we want to do, especially in the conference, is pass on that hope and give people the courage to pass on that hope. Because the thing that is marking this entire manifestation of the gospel that I started sharing many years ago is that there's nothing terminal about the gospel. There's nothing terminal about the planet. There's nothing terminal about your life. There is nothing. This is all, everything is going to be all right. And if we had just that concept, it would give us the courage to make it through most of life's things without any miracles, without any what we would be able to see as a miracle. We would be able to make it through most of this. In fact, the human race has been doing it for many, 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 many years without any obvious miracles taking place. So we got a lot of good news. It's just it's a lot of good news on every level, whether we're talking about eternity or whether we're talking about this planet, which I think both speak of eternity.
The manifestation of the gospel message is being seen in so many situations on the planet, as you said, Michael, throughout history. The night after the United States presidential election is the first night of the Gospel Revolution Convention, 20-08 in Houston, Texas. And as we've said many times before, we did not realize when we set the date that that would be following a historical moment. No matter what would happen on November 4th, 2008, it'd be historical. I mean, any time, I mean, there's only been 43 presidents, for God's sakes, that have been elected to office. So any time that a president, a new president, comes into office, it's historical. But here we have, it seems like, at least as far as the polls go, that we're on the verge of electing not only the first African-American president, a man with more melanin in his skin than any other man that has ever held that office, the fact that we're going to have perhaps a black family in the White House, it's historical. But here's a man that isn't just African-American. He's half white and half black. He has palled around with some of the most extreme segments of the left in United States politics, and yet, even last night, Barack Obama mentioned right-wing Republicans as people that he respected and would look forward to having that perspective in his administration. Michael, the gospel is being manifested in many ways in front of our eyes, and sometimes people, even though that they may be misled or a little bit thrown off course by current events like what's happening in the economy and the stock market, people have to pause for a second and realize the time we're living in, what we're seeing right now, even in our lifetime. When we went through the civil rights movement and when we went through the collapse of the Soviet Union and when we went through 9/11, if anybody would have told you after September 11th, 2001, that the United States 7 years later would be on the verge of electing a man named Barack Hussein Obama to the presidency, we would have said, go get yourself some help, get yourself some medication, because there's no way it's going to happen. But we're living it, and we're seeing it, and this has nothing to do with Obama's policies, his politics, who he is associated with himself. Just the fact that there is such a manifested change on the verge of happening in the most powerful nation that has ever existed on planet Earth, that should get folks' attention.
Well, people's hearts are changing about issues such as that. I mean, there are people who will not vote for Barack Obama or for McCain based on their policies. But the fact that I think what we're communicating is the fact that it is even within shot for this to take place in America. These years, 40 years after Martin Luther King's great speech and after his assassination, that the possibility in 40 years after that that the an African-American would be running on a ticket of a major political party in this country is really just quite amazing. So
it's almost like having a gay man being at the forefront of the message of liberation and redemption and salvation of the world from a spiritual perspective.
Yes. Yeah,
this is Glenn Klein online. We're talking with Michael Williams, the founder and president of this revolution known as Gospel Revolution. And we're taking your call tonight at 1-800-436-3260. Sean O'Halloran is waiting in our Tampa Bay studios for your call to call screen those, and plus you will be very pleasantly surprised at what a nice young man Sean is to speak to on the telephone, and we're waiting to hear from you. 1-800-436-3260, and one of our great correspondents out in the Stockton, California area is a man named Mr. Abraham Mackey, and he is online with us right now. Abraham!
Hey.
What is up, my brother?
In the Western world without end.
Yes.
We have not heard from you for a couple of weeks. I'm happy to hear from you. First of all, are you planning on being in Houston, my brother?
We will not be in Houston.
Bro. What? All right, so here
the
is
end
the next
of the world
question.
Is coming.
Why not?
Because we'll be somewhere else at that time.
All right, well, that's fair enough. Well, just know this, and please extend to Mary these same sentiments. You will be missed and be thought of often, but make sure you get the entire, not only CDs, but DVDs of the event, because it'll be like you'll be there, but we wish you were coming anyway.
We will get those as soon as they're available. We're like, everything is what we want to know. We'd love being a part of this. It is just continually amazing to me. So many things are just, you know, taking place in little ways, and maybe they're big ways, I don't know. One is that I am more and more aware of living a guiltless, blameless life.
All right, well, let's stop right there. Let's stop on guiltless and blameless life. What does that mean to you, Abraham?
Well, when I first heard Mike say this, when I first started listening to his recordings, the recordings, Mike, and I heard you say things like, you know, I mean, I'd heard other teachers, grace teachers, talk about, you know, grace, we don't need guilt and shame and all this, and I would certainly agree with that. But then I heard Mike Williams say that it had been years since he felt any guilt toward God about anything. And I thought, what an amazing concept. And as I've gone on, like you were talking earlier, Glenn, about, you know, you're continually working this gospel, the various aspects of it through your mind, through your heart. You're experiencing the renewing of your mind. I can see this great, wonderful liberty in relating to God. You're no longer, when something happens that maybe doesn't seem quite right, or even the things that do seem quite right, there's no longer this little voice inside that says, "Ooh, God liked that," or "Ooh, maybe God didn't like that." You know.
All right. Well, but let's compare and contrast that. Now, for those beautiful humans that are just logging in tonight and have not heard Abraham speak before, you need to know that Abraham was in evangelicalism for the better part of 34 years. And
yes.
So, how often do you think a day, Abraham, when you were in churchianity, that the thought of, is God happy with this or is he sad with this, would cross your mind?
Well, why don't you ask the question a different way? Was there ever a time during that time that I wasn't thinking, is God happy with this or isn't God happy with this? Because I don't think there was. I mean, sure, when you think God is happy, you know, the world is right, the sun is shining, everything's fine, but just wait a moment till some screwy thing happens and you think, wow, God must not be opening that door. God must not be doing this. Oh, you know. And then you run and you pray. And it is, I can understand why you say, Michael, that this caused insanity to flood through your mind. It is insanity.
Yeah, it really does. You know, watching the Bakes, one thing is, that flashed across my mind. One of the major news networks has had focus groups, you know, to have little monitors in their hand and as a blue line for the Democrats that were there and a red line for the Republicans or men and women, whatever their focus group was. And
okay.
Constantly underneath the debate was these lines at the middle margin, and, you know, these lines would go up and down all the way through. And you saying, you know, the question is, what's times of my life wasn't I considering was God happy or unhappy? and that's exactly the way I, you know, and I couldn't take my eyes off that little monitor. I couldn't even hardly watch the debate. I was hearing the debate, but I had to kind of watch it later because I found myself glued to the opinion monitor, you know, going up and down. And that really is what you were saying, is that's where we were. And the question really isn't when weren't we, because the answer is none of the time. Any of us that truly embraced evangelical Christianity the way it was presented to us in any form, from Catholicism to Protestantism, and then every form of Protestantism that I know of.
To Messianic Judaism, even.
All the way to Messianic
Judaism. I mean, if there's anything that is a visual for how the so-called Christian life is lived, is exactly that monitor that you just spoke about, Michael. I mean, from moment to moment, thought to thought, prayer to prayer, even when people would have or will have negative or what we could call naughty dreams, people would wake up in a panic and think, coming out of a dream, for God's sakes, God was not pleased with them, immediately hitting their knees, repenting for the thoughts that came into their mind from their subconscious while they were sleeping.
Yeah, and
that's,
you know,
not,
the,
that's not a nice place to live.
Go ahead, Abraham.
Well, I'm just agreeing with you. I experienced that very thing with dreams, wondering, oh, God is telling me something about something I did wrong, you know.
Yeah,
laying on bed of needles, you know.
All right, well, I have to make a confession right now. Many of you beautiful humans know that Dawn and I have 6 children. And one of our children, and I will not say who, was produced in the middle of the night when I had a very naughty dream and kind of woke up and rolled over and found that my wife was laying next to me. And out of this so-called sinful thought, one of the most wonderful lives that have ever been lived thus far on the planet was produced. So, and that, at the time, I was in the middle of my evangelical Christian messianic Jewish religious experience. But nobody can tell me that negative, as far as religion is concerned, thought, dream that went through my head was somehow as a direct result in producing one of the most beautiful humans that have walked the face of the earth. And Michael, when we talk about dreams, we talk about the subconscious often, but when something that the church or Christianity or religion would deem negative turns into something so beautiful and so positive, what are religious folks to do? What are they to think?
Yeah, well, you know, number one, just dealing with dreams, to label dreams as good or evil, you know, is to not monitor them, you know, to turn that monitor off. I think we've kind of got our theme going for tonight, is that, you know, what a liberation just to turn the monitor off. I respect people who love to try to figure out what dreams mean and all of those things, but my dream monitor is off. You know, I have them. Some of them tickle me, some of them frighten me, some of them stimulate me, but they, you know, all in all, they're just dreams. And it's just amazing to me now to think back that I tried so hard, you know, whether you are spiritualizing it to the negative or spiritualizing it to the positive. And it's not to say that somebody can't have a dream that is not inspiring and cause you to do something really wonderful, but there's people that have bad dreams that inspire them to do really bad things. It would be so much better. I think it's just healthier just to register the fact that a dream life is a dream life.
Right.
And dreams happen, you know. And no matter how intense they are, I you know, one of the things that I've learned to do about my dreams, because I have followed up on some dreams that were very intense and about other people, and I've called them and told them about it and how intense and described every detail, and they're like, yeah, wow. And it wasn't until I had time to be awake for a little while that it's like, wow, that was really kind of weird.
Yeah, but, you know, but Michael, you know very well that the Lord said that if you even think about it, you're as guilty as those people that have committed whatever heinous act that the law would determine as something negative. And what do you say to the people out there that may be listening to the sound of our voices right now that are trying to, even to the extreme of getting their dreams in line with what they would consider the law of God, and yet it doesn't happen, and they wake up in a complete condemned state, maybe even in a cold sweat? We have Abraham Mackey from Stockton, California online with us. He's saying that he's starting to live a guilt-free life. How does a person do that?
Well, there is no how to do that. It is something that does it for you, and that is called the gospel. And there are two things called the gospel, and one is called the gospel of peace, and the other is called the gospel of grace. And whatever the gospel of peace and the gospel of grace does, it does. But the only thing that I have in my heart, or any of us have a duty to perform, and if we feel a duty to perform of any kind, it should be just to simply share the gospel. There is no gospel of how to do it right. There is no gospel. It's just like one before last, we had a caller call in and ask about our position on abortion, and it was so marvelous to say we may have our own opinions about it, but abortion is not a gospel issue.
Yeah, that was James Forehand from Corpus Christi who brought up, I believe, in the first time in the 2-year history of the reemergence of this webcast, that amazingly, for the first time, abortion was brought up, and we were able to link abortion to every other single social issue in this country or throughout the world. It is not a moral issue. It is not a gospel issue.
Yeah, it's a moral issue, but it's not a gospel issue.
But right, because the gospel does not delineate between good and evil.
Absolutely. And the gospel is not about any law, and that's where the church has missed the revelation of the gospel, is because they've tried to mix the law with grace. And as I was teaching many years ago, that if adding one law to grace was okay, then how comfortable would they be with adding the drop of the blood of a goat to the blood of Jesus to make sure that it was right? Because the law required that the animals be sacrificed, and there was no law that required the sacrifice of Jesus. It was through a promise that Jesus did what he did for us on the cross. And it was not a law that made him our high priest. There was no law that made him the sacrifice. The sacrifices that were ordered by the law were the blood of bulls and goats. So if you are going to add a law to grace, then you can add, you surely must believe. You see, there, you can't parse these things apart. If you're going to believe one, you've got to open the gate.
What was the thing that caused Jesus' sacrifice, if it wasn't a law? What was the fulcrum, if you will, what was the tipping point that allowed Jesus' sacrifice and his life lived to be acceptable so that all would be made righteous?
Well, it came by a promise. That's what made it acceptable. Was that this was not something that was done through God's law. It was done through the promise of God. And Paul made that delineation between the two very, very clearly, that it was by the oath of God, by the promise of God, that by between two unmovable forces, between I will and I will in Hebrews chapter 4. And it wasn't, see, the law is I will if you will. That's a law. But you see, there is nothing. There was no agreement between God and man that brought Jesus to this earth, nor did an agreement between God and man bring Jesus to be the sacrifice for our sin, nor was there agreement between God and man that made him the perfect sacrifice for sin. There was not an agreement between God and man that raised Jesus from the dead. It was the fact that there was no agreement between God and man that caused the power of God to flow into or to be the driving force through the promise of God. There is no power in the law. The law does not contain any power at all except to accept what the law was given for. The law was given to reveal a condition that already existed. Even the law could not make them a man a sinner. It is so incredible, guys, when you stop and realize that nothing you did ever made you a sinner. In fact, we were born holy and righteous. We're having to talk in Pauline terms from as though we were still there to try to get the point across. But we were.
And by the way, that is exactly what Paul did too.
Absolutely. That's the way Paul taught. He had to teach it that way because it was the only way he could get the point across, was to teach it as though it was something that they were experiencing at the time. But to delineate between those forces. But there is, man's will was not involved in the redemption of this world. Man's will was not involved at all in the cross. Man's will was not involved in the death, the burial, and the resurrection. Man's will was not involved in the consummation of Jesus, nor his birth. He was not.
How much more was man's will involved in being separated from God in Adam and being considered a sinner prior to the cross than it was at the cross?
Equal portions. It's that was what Paul taught. We this is something that we were not in the picture of, but it was something that we for us to have a revelation and us to be able to see it. This was the process. But when we begin to realize that even the law, that statement just blows me away. Paul said that the law never made any man a sinner. Get it? What a powerful statement. The law, God's law that said, thou shall not, that law never made anybody a sinner.
What did?
It was the transgression of Adam. It was the partaking of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. And God imputed to man, God charged to man's account the act of one man. But it was, and did so. Because once one man had disobeyed, instead of allowing us, if God had not cut it off right then, if God hadn't shut the whole system down, once one man had transgressed, and then God charged that sin to every human being, then everyone who would have been a transgressor based on their own merit, God would have had to come up with a separate redeemer or redemption plan for each human being.
Right.
Right.
But he didn't have, but he shut the whole thing down. He said, one man has transgressed, it will stop here, and I will come up with one plan to redeem the whole human race, because after the partaking of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, it was obvious that man was going to take this route, and how merciful it was. And then when God gave his law, it was not to point the way to righteousness for us, because the only way for God to show us righteousness was to reveal a condition of sin. And a condition of sin that was not brought on by our actions and our deeds. So how did he do it? He outlawed everything that was human, not just everything
right.
that was bad.
Right.
He outlawed everything that was...
He outlawed natural... Listen to this, folks. He outlawed natural functions that he put into place, like the female menstrual cycle, and that men who were naturally attracted to their females were considered condemned and should be put to death if they had sexual relations with their women who just happened to be in the menstrual cycle. But, I mean, that's just one thing, Michael. There are 613 rules and regulations. The law of God is not just 10 commandments, ladies and gentlemen. It's 603 other rules, regulations specific. And Michael, as you just said, it condemned human existence completely.
It condemned you for being human, not for being... It didn't condemn you for your actions and deeds. It had to condemn you for being a human for you to get the revelation, oh my gosh, it must not be me that's sinning. It must be sin that dwelleth in me. Now that was the revelation. And Paul went through this process. Paul wasn't talking about what it's like to live the Christian life, quote unquote. It was Paul relating to people the transition at the cross from being under the law, and then his own revelation of coming into understanding that when he was struck down on the road to Damascus. And that revelation is the thing that we're sharing with this planet, and it is what I'll use the rest of my breath to share on this planet, is that powerful freedom. But these concepts are extremely simple, but they cannot be muddied up with ifs, ands, buts, or maybes. You have to let them be what they are. Let God be God and let humans be humans. We are redeemed by the Lord. We are not part of the process. We let the redeemed of the Lord say so. All we can do is say so. We don't have any part of this redemption except to say, yay, thank you. That's our part.
Wonderful.
What'd you say, Abraham?
I said, we are the beneficiaries.
That's very true. Very true. And we have nothing to do with this amazing, amazing thing called the redemption of the world. And even salvation is not up to us. Folks, it's not up to you to save your own soul. It is up to you to allow the gospel to save your soul.
Yes.
To allow the gospel.
I love the term, Abraham, that you just used, beneficiary, because that's a legal term. And the way that the cross proceeded, the way of the plan of God proceeded, and with all due respect to folks that think that the cross and the sacrifice and the blood and the humiliation that Yeshua, that Jesus went through, was not part of the plan of God. Michael, God himself prophesied to Adam and Eve right at the outset of the Garden of Eden episode that it would be the seed of women, or the seed of that woman, that would redeem the earth. And we know that women do not have seed.
Yeah.
So something happened in the interim between then and now that was a fulfillment of that prophecy of God to Adam and Eve, that the seed of woman, a.k.a. the virgin birth, occurred, that Yeshua, that salvation, that Jesus was born not of man's seed, but of the Spirit.
Yeah.
And that as I was talking to a precious woman the other night about the born-again experience, that she was making the case that you must be born again. And she quoted it accurately. Unless a man is born again, you will not see the kingdom of God. And a man was born again. A man was born of the flesh and born of the Spirit, died for the sin of the world, was resurrected on the third day. And because that all happened successfully, all humanity is in him when he was raised, resurrected, and ascended to the right hand of the Father. That's pretty good news.
Oh, that's a gem.
It's a one-man doctrine, one-seed doctrine. It was never about us. Oh, my gosh. It was never, it was never, ever, ever about us. It was all about Jesus. It was
this
all
is
about
Klein
Jesus.
Online. We're talking with Michael Williams, the president and founder of the Gospel Revolution. We're talking with Abraham Mackey, the Stockton, California correspondent of the Gospel Revolution. This is Glenn Klein Online, Sean O'Halloran in studio. Abraham, I've got to get back because this is a relative new experience for you, living guilt-free. Talk to the beautiful humans a little bit about how that has transpired and what has been the thought process and how that has manifested in your life on a day-by-day basis.
Well, it's like unconsciously liberating.
Mm-hmm.
It is exactly what Mike said earlier, that it's nothing you do. I see it happening. I mean, I don't even know how it, you know, the wind bloweth where it listeth.
Yes, yes.
I don't know how it's happening. All I can tell you is that I have this divine curiosity in me to every day I want to understand more. I want to be able to communicate it and share it, and so it's all working through my mind and heart, and the benefit of it is, I might not have even known how to describe it. I might have just said, gee, I feel great. But in listening to Mike, I can understand it is the absence of guilt. And this terrible weight and how life gets twisted when you feel guilty. It's horrible. And I can identify exactly, this is what I experienced while all those years in what we call evangelical Christianity, is the ins and outs of guilt and shame. And this is why people run up and they're going to make confession and they're going to get their life right. It's a treadmill. It's horrible. It's not living. It's not what Jesus said he came to bring, an abundant life.
Well, this is a man, ladies and gentlemen, that had lived it for 34 years. Michael was well into a quarter century. I was fortunately only into about 10 years of it when I came across Mike Williams' cassette tape at the time that a friend of mine handed to me, and I threw it in my car, and I just happened to stick it in the tape player while on a road trip, and I thought, what in the world is this? And Abraham, when was the last time, can you remember the last time that you looked at another human being and thought, I'm better off in God than they are?
Oh, well, that might not be too distant. Because I'm working through my own inclination to do that very thing. You know, even getting to know, you know, like I would call into the webcast every week like I have tonight, and I would tell you all these exploits of me going into these meetings where I was going to tell them, you know, and then finally I said, this is pointless. So in those times there, I can sit, you know, did I feel I was better than them? No, but I did feel like, gosh, you guys are all caught up in this same thing, this same treadmill. But I feel much more at peace not trying to engage in that, not trying to make a point to somebody. I don't know if I answered your question.
No, that was a beautiful answer. I think that's the greatest thing that happens, Michael, when the grace of God is established in one's heart. We don't have to make any more points. We get to share our lives and what we have discovered through our studies of the Scriptures and the New Testament commentary, and we are under no obligation at all to do anything at all to somehow curry favor with God. And that, if you tune on Christian television or turn on Christian radio, Michael, that's basically all you hear is what you need to do to curry favor with the Almighty. And this thing completely blows that up, because we're saying that not only do you not have to, but you cannot do anything that would change God's view or opinion of yourself.
Right. Well, you know, the I think one of the most powerful things, and we could extrapolate on this for the next several webcasts, but in the absence of guilt, there is an explosion of wisdom and understanding. Mm-hmm. You don't have to try to become wise. You don't have to try to become gain understanding. All you have to do is get freed from guilt, and there is an explosion of wisdom and understanding that begins to take place. You understand things that you never tried to figure out. You have wisdom to handle things that you wouldn't have never known how to handle them. You know, in the in Psalms it says, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. And I remember years ago I was going to teach on that, and I couldn't get it, though. It just haunted me that verse said the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, and finally it hit me. It may be the beginning of wisdom, but it's not the end. That's just where wisdom began. Wisdom began when the law caused people to fear God. That was the beginning of wisdom, because when people begin to fear because of law, it was the key to begin to unlock guilt, because man was going to be brought to a point to where that he saw God through completely different eyes. It was almost as though the law had to completely develop a completely negative perspective so that a completely reversed perspective could come along. But in the absence of guilt, there is an explosion of wisdom and understanding. I tell you, you may be the biggest fool on earth, but if you ever step out of guilt, you will step into wisdom. You will step into understanding. It is not something you conjure up. It is not something you try to get. It is just yours, because God has made of in Christ has made him to be unto us righteousness, wisdom, and understanding. He has caused him to be and redemption for us. He is our wisdom. He is our understanding. And that only manifests itself, though, in the absence of guilt.
And that's the reason, Michael, that you say without fear of contradiction or any kind of nervousness at all, that it would be better off for people not to have any understanding of God or any belief in God or any insight about the creator of the universe than it would be if they coupled that with a sense of God's judgment, condemnation, and guilt. It's better for people not to believe in God than to believe in God that is up there, you know, kind of like Santa Claus, keeping a track of who's naughty and who is nice.
Yeah, absolutely. It is certainly healthier to be a complete atheist than to be a Christian.
What did you just say?
It is mentally and emotionally completely healthier to be an atheist than to be a Christian.
Yeah. Well, on that note, I'll remind you that this is Glenn Klein Online. I think we're still on. I think that the government is still allowing us to webcast, even though we say things that are so pointed and so truthful as that. We've got Michael Williams on the line, the president and founder of the Gospel Revolution, Abraham Mackey, calling us from Stockton, California. Abraham, do you regret the 34 years that you spent in the church?
You know, that I love that question, because that actually came up earlier today. That is another amazing byproduct of the gospel, which is the power of God unto salvation. I have absolutely no regret.
That's awesome.
I mean, you could call that my university. the University of How Not to Do It, or whatever you want. I mean, because during those 34 years, I mean, there were glimpses of this thing all the way along the way.
Right.
I mean, it isn't like this is not, that I've never heard of any of this. I mean, you get glimpses of it here, and your spirit rises up for a moment, but then, you know, you get the mixture, and down you go again, and up and down, and up and down, and so you never can get the picture in your mind. The gospel remains shrouded. No, I do not regret those. For one thing, all of those years kind of provide a fuel to me that makes me not want to waste another day going there. Like, you know, there's this one fellow that I've been talking with, and he says he calls me his religious mentor, and I laugh and everything. So we get together and we talk, and he's drinking in all this stuff, and then all of a sudden he pops in and he says, "Oh, I want you to come to church with me." And I want to just put my arm around him. I said, "Friend, no."
No. Well, you know, one of the aspects of this, and I recognize it, and Michael, you may recognize it perhaps as strongly as I do, that coming out of what we call evangelicalism or Christianity or religion is nothing different than coming out of a cult. Of course, Carlton, who will be our guest on Wednesday night and Thursday morning in just 3 weeks from now, calls it the cult of Christianity. But coming out of it, maybe you've experienced that too, Abraham. I mean, that is not an easy thing to come away with, because all your social contacts, your entire identity is wrapped up in the church, and you try to come out of that, change is stressful. And you are at the bottom of the totem pole as far as people are concerned when you start questioning the power structure within the church. Michael, you experienced that because you were a part of the leadership. For those folks that are sitting in the pew, that are looking for their acceptance and their identity through their relationships with people in the church and with the pastor that speaks behind the pulpit every Sunday, and seems so powerful and so wise and so happy and so wealthy and so healthy, this is not an easy process for people to go through. That's kind of one of the reasons we're here, aren't we?
Oh, yeah.
Yes, it absolutely is. I mean, we're here to be a part of the journey. And, you know, the thing of it is that I have such great respect for is the path that someone else is on. And I learned a long time ago, Glenn, you know, it is not my job, and neither is it of the mind of the Lord at all for me to get on someone else's path. But when our paths come so close that I can hold your hand, then I will hold your hand. And that's what this webcast is doing. That's what the conference is doing. We can't step off our own path. Folks, I've got to walk my own walk. I've got to go on my own journey. I've got to be on my own path. But it doesn't mean that these paths have to stay completely apart. And there are times, let me tell you, there's times that this path is going to take you into the wilderness, and you will be completely alone. But you've got to understand that path takes that journey, and it's there for your benefit, that the wilderness and the loneliness and the absolute loneliness, I can't say it any different, I started to try to water that down a little bit, but it's the loneliness. When your path takes you to that loneliness, you need to just embrace the fact this is the lonely time. I don't understand why it's going to be this way. And even with depression and those things, you just have to accept this is the depressed time. You know, I'm going to go through this. But that's so contrary to our religious thinking, you know, that we're supposed to be, you know, this is the day, you know, and just fake our way through this.
The joy of the Lord is my strength. I feel like slitting my wrist today. The joy of the Lord is my strength.
But, yes, thank you, Glenn. And so when our paths come close enough for us to reach out and hold one another's hand, when our path comes close enough for me to give you a hug, that's what I want to do. When our path comes close enough for us to share, when our paths cross close enough to where that I can be a part of your journey, I can't leave my path to get on yours. But by golly, we can walk side by side when it comes time to walk side by side.
And you'll remember, fellas, that back in the day in the church, that if somebody was a little bit askew, you were discouraged from clasping hands with somebody that was on your journey because they might be full of the devil.
Yeah.
And that devil literally, not just figuratively, but literally could be passed on to you from, Michael, from just having a relationship with somebody who disagreed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. You were not supposed to be in their presence. Let me tell you something. Any place that takes me into the presence of other people, that's where I'm supposed to be. You know, you just got to embrace the moment. You know, carpe diem, you know. And grab that moment if it is in your heart to do so. And it doesn't make any difference, you know, where you happen to be or where they happen to be. You can share the love of God with anybody, anywhere, in any place, at any time. You know, my, the stories that I remember of people that were in our genre, which we so condemned the, you know, any type of pornography or anything like that at all. And I remember a couple of the guys getting caught in porno shops and having to come up and make these wild things of, you know, having to go into a, you know, a praise God moment outside because somebody had caught them coming out of the porno shop. And,
what would be a classic excuse for being caught in a porno shop if you were known to be a churchgoer?
Oh, they were in there sharing the Lord with people. So that was actually true. That would have been wonderful. But you see, we can't allow ourselves to be out of our environment, and we have to change into something else when we're out of our environment. We have to hide who we are, what we are. We have to cloak ourselves. And that's the awesome thing about the gospel, is that all you got to do is be yourself.
Right. And I think that is one of the most powerful things. I mean, I cannot even begin to imagine the amount of hours that I've spent listening to Michael Williams proclaim the good news of the gospel of Jesus Christ. But of all the things, Michael, that you have proclaimed from the pulpit, from this webcast, from just our personal conversations, there may not be another more powerful concept than the idea of the gospel freeing ourselves up to be exactly who God intended us to be. There is nobody on the planet, ladies and gentlemen, that has your fingerprints. There never has been. There never will be. I don't know if there's a greater evidence of a creator and one that's interested in the unique aspect of each and the unique dignity of each individual than the fact that we have all physical, unique fingerprints. But we know from our study and from our understanding of spiritual things, if you will, that the physical answers to the spiritual and to the emotional. And in the same way, Michael, that people have unique fingerprints, people have unique personalities, that if they start to try to fit themselves into a cookie cutter of the church or anything else, they are therefore allowing the people in their lives, both directly and indirectly, not to experience all that this life has to be a part, or all that this life is a part of, because they're trying to be somebody they are not. And what a dangerous thing, and what a negative, counterproductive effort to try to be a human being that you were not intended to be. And yet that is exactly what the church has been doing for the better part of 2,000 years.
Well, that's what being a Christian is. It's being what you are not.
Abraham, how freed up have you been in the last couple months to be the true Abraham Mackey that came out of his mom's womb, and as opposed to trying to fit into some understanding or cookie cutter mentality, to carry the metaphor a little bit further, when you were in the church?
Well, I think again, it's another one of these things that's just happening. I have this sense of being true that wasn't there before, because I consciously had these things in my mind that I thought I was supposed to be, and had failed to get there, and now I'm getting older, you know, and so it doesn't look like I'm ever going to get there. So I settled into a mindset of failure, having settled for second best. I'm not the man I ought to be, and that was me. That was the life I lived. That's what was ruining my relationship with my wife, was changing my relationship with my kids, because as the years waxed on, I carried that mentality, and it was getting worse. And so all that Mary and I have gone through kind of brought me to a death where a lot of those dreams, before I ever really heard the gospel coming through Mike, a lot of those delusions that I had struggled to attain had already been smashed to smithereens.
What were some of those illusions?
Oh, well, I was to be the man of God. I was called to preach the gospel, to be a big success.
Mm-hmm.
And that dream was fizzling away as I sat in church, and, you know, the parade of celebrities that comes through every month. We got the parade of celebrities in the Christian life that are doing it, and give your money to them because they're, and here I'm sitting there and I'm just a poor printer, you know, raising my family, and all those dreams have been just, they never came to pass, the big prophecies and all that kind of stuff, you know. And so you just carry that mentality, and it was killing me. That was horrible. So,
well, you know, that is what God said, Michael, would be the result of Adam partaking of the knowledge of good and evil, was that it would result in death. And here Abraham is basically saying the same thing. We can totally relate. It literally, when you're living in guilt and condemnation and judgmentalist perspective, it literally produces such stress that it brings on premature death sometimes.
Yeah. I'd like to point out something, too, that I was listening to a message of yours this morning, Michael, is called Love and Acceptance. I don't know where or when you were teaching it, but there's something you said in there that I think goes right along with this, is that you said that our ability to take in and accept the gospel as it really is in direct proportion to the things inside of us that we think God is not happy with, that need to be changed. And for all the things that we see inside of us that are unsettled, that we think have to change, that God's not happy with, it's only to that ratio that we're able to grasp and understand and take in the gospel. Now, did I get that right?
Well, I would agree with that, yes. I don't remember saying it, but I agree with it.
Well, Abraham, thank you for taking the time to call us, brother. We've got we're actually over time now, but I do want to, as we say goodbye to Abraham, leave the line open if there's somebody that's been waiting to get online to have an opportunity to call. But never hesitate to be in touch with us, okay?
All right. Bye.
It's Abraham Mackey, ladies and gentlemen.
Bye.
our Stockton, California Gospel Revolution correspondent. Mikey, as we close the webcast for this week, you and I have known each other for the better part of 13 years and have been in this thing both initially, just like Abraham got into it. He heard a tape, somebody heard a webcast, somebody stumbled on the website. But knowing me, and I'd be able to answer this if somebody asked it about you, how have you seen, as Abraham was talking about, the gospel just having its way without any effort, how have you seen that manifested in my life?
Oh, my. It has been an amazing thing to watch, as it is in anybody's life. But I have watched Glenn Kline embrace himself, I think, more than anything, no matter what that is. And I've watched you become at peace with yourself. And that's a huge thing, to accept yourself.
Other than accepting or understanding the peace that we are at with God, there probably isn't anything more important than coming to a place where you just accept yourself. The ironic thing is that as we do that, whatever aberrant behavior or whatever compulsive behavior that causes people to do things that are unproductive and unprofitable seems to have less of an effect or less power over us. I've seen it in the same exact thing in your life. You've talked about this on the webcast, how before the gospel was established in your heart, you couldn't even walk by a magazine rack in a Barnes & Noble's without being drawn to look at just regular pictures on a magazine rack. And now by your own testimony, you say you hardly even know where the magazine rack is.
Oh,
and the power of that drew you, that caused guilt, that caused condemnation, has been relinquished without any effort in and of yourself, Michael, but because the gospel does not contain the power, is not involved with the power, but it is the power of God.
Yeah, and the acceptance of that, and that the gospel will do its own thing through and for my life, whatever that is. That is just such a great confidence, and that's where that again we come back to the beginning of the broadcast. That's where I have become a true eternal optimist.
Yeah,
because the conclusion of this is, no matter what happens today or tomorrow, my story's not over yet, Glenn. And no matter what tragedies have befallen me or setbacks I've had, my story's not over with. No matter how bad I got, knocked off the rung of the ladder that I was on, that I perceived that I was on at least, my story's not over yet. And no matter what the losses are or the gains are, my story isn't over yet. And that's the thing I want to encourage everyone about. No matter where you're at in life, I know a lot of people have lost an awful lot of your retirement savings, and a lot's going on right now. But just remember, your story's not over yet. So there is life on the other side of everything. There is life. It's not just life beyond the grave. There's life beyond this current crisis that we're in.
Yes,
in this country.
Yes.
There's life beyond today. There's a day after tomorrow, and there's a day after that. And you're not waiting to get to eternity. You're living in eternity right now.
Yes. Yes. Why is that, Mikey? Why can you say something like that? Why are people, whether they know it or not, why are they living in eternity right now?
Because of Jesus Christ, because of the work of God. We are living in eternity. We are eternal beings, and we are not temporary experiments of some kind. We are eternal beings. And that will never end. And there, even if you wake up dead tomorrow, your story isn't over. You're going to go on, and go on we do. And so those of you that are facing tragedies in your life as you listen to this broadcast either now or on the archive, please let me encourage you that there's life beyond the current situation that you face. There really is. No matter how disheartening, no matter how discouraging, there's life beyond this.
Well, I was talking to a friend of mine who I would not say is a gospel revolutionary yet, and yet he is definitely going in a more freedom-laden direction. And he was just absolutely distraught over the financial situation, what it was doing to his business, what seems to be happening in our government, etc. And I said to him, I said, Brian, I said, even if everything was going perfect, as far as we could understand, in about 50 years, we're going to be dead anyway. So at the end of the day, it really doesn't matter about what is happening in our social system, in our political system, in our economic system. It's all about what God infused into the system of humanity 2,000 years ago. And that when you embrace and are embraced by the concept of an eternal peace for all humanity, we're talking beautiful humans about everybody that is in your life right now. There is always a tomorrow. There is always a bright spot. And Michael and I know each other intimately enough to know what kind of garbage and what kind of crapola each of us have experienced over the last decade or so. And it's been hellish on the surface, Mikey. Would you not agree?
Oh, absolutely.
But at the end of the day, here we are, still with a smile on our face, still proclaiming the good news of God, because the gospel, as Abraham was indicating earlier, has an effect even when we're not, or I could even say especially when we're not aware of it. It's only in looking back that we can say, oh, yeah, that's how depressed I was, or that's how out of sort I was. But somehow this recitation, and I cannot encourage you folks enough to get the CDs, to listen to the webcast. We've got 2 years worth of webcasts. More than once a week, because there are sometimes, like when we did the email extravaganza, that we did more than one a week. And it's free. Michael, if people do not take advantage of the resources that there are of the gospel revolution, or of people wherever they are on the planet proclaiming this unconditional love, this good news, this complete receptivity of God for humanity, they could be living as though they are condemned with God, but they're not condemned at all. And what a shame that is. But the fact of the matter is, the more that you stay focused and the more that you talk about it, the more that you hear CDs, the more that you come to conventions and meetings, it will have an effect, because the gospel is, Michael, the power of God. It affects people where it's supposed to affect us, between the ears. And we cannot encourage people enough to stay plugged in, because it does have a dramatic effect. There are people that have heard the gospel that it makes sense to, and then they leave it alone, like it never even existed. They move on with their lives, and they're living like any other person, whether it be in the pew or somebody that is completely unchurched, swayed and persuaded by the dictates of life, which, I mean, they ebb and flow. As I was coming into the undisclosed location tonight, I noticed that the moon was almost full. Even a full moon will have an effect on people's emotions. But if you want to have the most positive effect that you could have on your soul, on your heart, on your emotions, on your relationships, stay plugged into the gospel. That's pretty good advice, don't you think, Michael?
I think we've heard from the doctor.
The doctor of love. All right. Well, this is Thursday night. If you're listening on the archive right now, you know that we had previously recorded this. But literally, 3 weeks from tonight, we will be right in the middle of the Gospel Revolution Convention. And you see, one thing we don't promise people that they're going to be financially blessed, Michael. We don't promise people they're going to be healed if they come. We're not going to have a healing service. But one thing we know, as far as the Bible is concerned and the way that the Bible defines it, we have absolutely no doubt at all that the people that are going to participate in the Gospel Revolution Convention will come away more saved than when they went in. That's for sure, right?
Oh, absolutely. And this is like going to the Disneyland of salvation. So there's a lot to take of. Come jump on a ride and let's get on Mr. Toad and see what it feels like.
Well, you're not going to have to wait in line to receive the salvation. You may have to wait in line to go through security as you get on a plane wherever you're coming to George H.W. Bush Airport in beautiful Houston, which just is a few minutes away from the Marriott North at Greenpoint in Houston where the convention is. We have free transportation. Even though that, Michael, we're just a little less than 3 weeks out from the convention, there's still time for people to get good airfares. We have still a few rooms left, which is a significant discount at the Marriott. And as we close tonight, and we appreciate Sean's staying over for extra time and for you folks listening, but as we close tonight, could you please implore people that if they're on the fence at all about coming to Houston November 5th through the 9th to get off that fence and to hop in and to get ready to be saved?
Yeah, you know, life is a bowl full of choices. So, you know, pick this one out of the bowl and do something really nice to yourself and for yourself and for everybody that knows you, because they know you need your soul saved a little more. And as we all do, and do something powerful for yourself and make this a priority. You know, things are important that you say are important, and the only reason that we make the choices that we do is the priorities that we make. So make it a priority and come on down. Those of you that can't be with us, even if you were to prioritize it, it still won't allow you to come. Then go ahead and sign up for the CDs for the entire convention and the DVDs, and but be there.
No doubt. And by the way, beautiful humans, if you are thinking that you can't come because the hotel room is just too expensive and you can't afford it, Michael, we have people, both men and women, who are looking to have roommates for the 5 days. Mm-hmm. It's actually
very
just
true.
Four nights. And we can hook people up together and would be happy to do that. Just give Michael a call during the day at his office at 281-894-0101. That's 281-894-0101. And, Michael, you'll be happy. I know you've talked to people who are looking, who are already committed to coming to the convention, but they're looking to defray some of the cost by sharing a room with somebody.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, all of the folks that we have coming so far are couples, and we do have folks that are coming that are single. And so if the thing that's stopping you is that the price of the room, you know, the fact of it is you can actually get by with just about $50 a night, a little over $50 a night, to be able to stay at the Marriott. It's a beautiful hotel, and the space is there for you, so come on
exactly.
down.
Well, they even have a jacuzzi, I think, so we're going to be sitting around the hot tub and talking about the love of God and the good news of Jesus Christ. Thank you, Michael, for your time, and we also want to thank Abraham Mackey for taking the time to picking up the phone and letting us into his life. It's been so exciting to see the development of the gospel in Abraham and Mary Mackey's life out there on the West Coast?
It absolutely has. You know, this is always the beautiful thing to watch. It's a beautiful thing to experience, and a beautiful thing to behold too. So, whether it's happening to me or happening to you, the gospel is good news for sure.
Also want to thank Sean O'Halloran for producing and engineering and call screening down there in Tampa Bay, where, by the way, the area that I reside in, the Tampa Bay region, is just about coming out unglued because the Tampa Bay Rays, who heretofore had been not only the worst team in professional baseball, but maybe the worst franchise in professional sports, are on the verge of going to the World Series. And Lord willing, and if the creek don't rise, I'll be back in Tampa Bay next Wednesday for the next edition of this webcast. And as I leave the undisclosed location, just know we're thinking about you. We really want to see you in Houston if there's any way possible. But until next time, this is Glenn Klein Online saying, Shalom, everybody!